91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today we begin with news about a venture of the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. It's the Knight Cities Challenge, which offers awards for ideas to make cities more successful. Good afternoon. It's Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. The challenge attracted some 7,000 entrants, and one from Miami was a winner. The Floating Miami Science Barge, a wondrous example of green tech, and more, Linda Gassenheimer's Food and Dining. We'll visit with the author of Secrets from the La Varenne Kitchen. She holds 40 years of Parisian cuisine secrets. That's next, right after NPR and Regional News. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. And we begin today's program with a look at the Knight Cities Challenge.
What's that, you ask? The Knight Foundation awards grants for ideas to make cities better and more sustainable. There's a Miami Winners connection with us today as well.
And we're joined now by the Knight Foundation's Miami Program Director, Matt Hagman. He has a long South Florida journalism background and serves on many boards and initiatives. Welcome to you, Matt Hagman.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We also have engineer and entrepreneur Dr. Ted Kaplow, the co-founder and CEO of CAPSCI. That's C-A-P-P-S-C-I. It's a nonprofit organization which produced the Floating Miami Science Barge. We'll learn more about that and CAPSCI in minutes. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Good to be here.
And also in the studio is Natalie Marzano-Smith, who's the Director of Innovation at CAPSCI and responsible for many of its outreach campaigns. Welcome to you, Natalie.
Thank
Welcome
you so much.
Welcome to Topical Currents.
Good to have you all here. So before we get to the Knight Cities Challenge and the Miami Science Barge, I just want to ask you, Matt, what brought you to the Knight Foundation and why did you leave journalism?
Yeah, so I was in journalism for about 10 years. I started at the Daily Business Review and then moved over to the Herald, where I was for about 8 years. I loved being a journalist. It was, you know, the very best job I could ever want. However, an opportunity came up about 3.5 years ago where this opportunity to go to Knight Foundation as the Miami Program Director came up. And of course, when I first learned about it, I thought, what do you do as a Miami Program Director? But the more I learned about it, I learned what a unique opportunity it is and what a privilege it is to work at Knight Foundation, where you have this amazing opportunity to go find, you know, ideas that can drive change in a community, and you have the resources to back those ideas and try and make them happen.
Yeah.
Give us a little history of the Knight Foundation.
Sure.
Of course, the Knight brothers,
yeah,
and the Miami Herald and the other newspapers.
Yep. So Jack and Jim Knight built what at one point was the largest newspaper chain in the country. They had newspapers in some 26 different cities, such as the Detroit Free Press and the Philadelphia Inquirer. They started with the Akron Beacon Journal in Ohio, and, of course, the Miami Herald. Ultimately, of course, with the fortune that they made from being such successful newspaper publishers, part of that was directed to Knight Foundation creating the endowment that we have the great fortune of trying to bring, you know, community benefits in all of our Knight cities across the U.S.
Now, you mentioned they had papers in 26 cities.
Yeah.
How ironic that Knight Cities Challenge
is in 26
cities.
Well, you know, that was the insight of the brothers when they launched the foundation. They said, look, we want to have a national foundation, but we want to pay special attention to the cities that were, you know, were so good to us, where we published papers all those years. So to this day, those cities still feel get a lot of love and attention from Knight Foundation.
Well, should we talk about the Knight Cities Challenge before we introduce some of our winners?
The background, the ground rules, and such.
Sure, absolutely. So this is the second year we've done this. Probably a lot of listeners are familiar with the Knight Arts Challenge, which continues to this day, which is an annual competition. But last year we started the Knight Cities Challenge, and this really allows for a broader set of ideas to be considered for funding. And the question is, how can you help make your city more successful? Right? What is the way that you can sort of take hold of your city's future? In our case here, in Miami. And what's an idea to drive that change? And we're putting $5 million that will be available to winners. Well, you can apply from anywhere, but the idea must manifest, must take place in one of the night cities. So in our case, it must happen here in Miami.
And how of that $5 million, how is it determined who gets how much?
You know,
the
at the outset, we don't decide how it's going to be divvied up, right? At the more than anything else, this is about finding great ideas, and then we figure out what the funding should be. The challenge starts October 1st. We'll repeat this a couple times. Nightcities.org is the website to go to to learn about it. But this is a great opportunity to apply to get funding for your idea to make our city of Miami a better place.
What are some of the gamut of the submissions that you've had previously?
Sure. Well, we've only had 1 year, so certainly.
And you only had how many thousand applications?
Yeah, we had many thousands. Yes. Of course, remember, this is across the country. Right. And we're going to learn about our great winner here in Miami shortly. But it's ranged, for example, in Akron, there was a sort of a welcome Akron kit. It's called Unbox Akron, where on a monthly basis, someone would receive a box of different sort of goods and that are built, that have been created in Akron, or things happening in Akron, or in Gary, Indiana, a night
kind
city.
Kind of a welcome
a
way.
Kitchen, again. That's right. Or, you know, a lot of cities can be very hard to sort of plug in or find out what's happening. This was one way to deal with that. Or in Gary, Indiana, a kitchen incubator, for example.
A kitchen incubator.
Yeah, so thinking about if you have an idea around food, right? But where do you sort of go to work on it and build that idea? Mm-hmm. This tries to help solve that problem. And I think as applicants, before we just hear the awesome idea that was a winner here in Miami, the things to think about, sort of the impact that would be delivered by the idea, how innovative is it? Is this going to inspire, right? What can we learn from it? Are there ripple effects we learn across the community? And of course, ultimately, can you do it? Do you have the capacity to deliver on this particular idea? I think with each of those things, if you can say yes and feel good about it,
go for it. Okay, Dr. Ted Kaplow and Natalie Manzano-Smith, congratulations on your Night Cities Challenge grant. Tell us about the barge, the Miami Science Barge. And first, you know, introduce yourselves and tell us what you had to do with the barge.
Dr. Ted Kaplow.
Thank you. So my background is in engineering, and my engagement with the barge is really from the kind of conceptual and building aspect of it, from the kind of big picture side. And I think a lot of what Matt said about Night Cities is very relevant to the type of program that the Miami Science Barge is, because it really is a program that's targeted at the scale of the entire city, the entire community, because it's we'll get into the details in a few minutes, but the range of things that are happening on this platform can't be narrowed down to just one particular field or one particular type of innovation or idea. It's really a very broad platform, and it will appeal, we're fairly certain, to a broad cross section, if you will, of the entire community, and really therefore hopefully have an impact on the entire city. So it's very apropos that we're supported as a Night Cities Challenge winner, because that really is kind of the scope that we've approached. That's without getting into details about what the program
which
is.
Which we will.
Just the way,
okay,
the way
Natalie, tell us about your role in the Miami Science Barge.
So the original Science Barge in New York was a concept created by Ted, and I was working for Ted at the point for about a year and went up to visit the original Science Barge and came back thinking this is something that Miami absolutely needs. So I started pestering him for several months, and he said, if you can make this happen, go ahead. And I applied to the Night Cities Challenge, and we were very fortunate to go through the process and win, with a lot of support from Ted, obviously. But that's how we conceived of it, just thinking that Miami needed this.
Okay, so now tell us what it is and where it's going to be and when it's going to be operational.
And how big is it? It's a floating farm.
So it's fairly large. It's 120 feet by 30 feet. It's an actual steel deck barge that we're repurposing. It was used up in Fort Lauderdale for construction and different types of events, and now we're using it as a floating classroom and laboratory, in essence. We'll be located in downtown Miami in Museum Park, in one of the notches really close to the American Airlines Arena, so right on the water. And what we're looking to do with this project is really tie the natural environment with the urban environment. So smack dab in the middle of the city, you'll be able to engage with Biscayne Bay and learn about sustainability.
And what are your dreams for it? How do you envision what it's going to do and how people will use it?
So we really hope that it's going to become a catalyst for change in Miami in terms of sustainability. We want to display solar power and different types of renewable technologies so that people understand how easily this can be implemented in South Florida and eliminate some of the barriers in people's minds to having these technologies in their home or understanding how to use them or be a part of it.
And how will it be sustained?
Well, right now we have the generous grant from the Knight Foundation, and we're looking for additional funders and sponsor support. So we're in the process of working on that, and we're in the process of constructing the barge as well on the Miami River.
So, Dr. Kaplow, what do you think that the final figure will be to make this come to fruition?
Well, it's a remarkably modest figure.
By your standards.
Yes. Yes.
Not by my standards. No, by the standards of the Knight Foundation. No, I think that we'll be able to put this whole program out there for around $400,000 or $500,000, plus the cost of the barge itself. But that's really a choice we made here. When we did this in New York, we rented that platform, and that program in New York is still going after 8 years. And now we regret that we didn't purchase the platform outright. So. The barge itself is a piece roughly that same size again, but that's a cost that I think of as being amortized over the lifetime, the infinite lifetime of this project. I should say indefinite lifetime of this project. But all the other costs are really, really around $500,000.
Now, it's a floating barge. Does that mean it can move to another area to be exhibited?
It has that capability. This is a U.S. Coast Guard certified passenger vessel.
So it would go to Fort Lauderdale by the Museum of Science or something like that.
It could. We,
in fact, initially it'll have to, right? Because you're going to construct it on the Miami River.
We're going to construct it on the Miami River, and then we're going to move it to downtown Miami. And I believe that this program will be so successful in this community and so popular that we'll never be asked to leave.
And how will it be powered?
Is solar power. So the barge itself won't move. It's a floating museum. It'll move to the park. Then it'll be moored there. But all of the systems on board will be powered by a solar power system, and then we have batteries to store that energy.
So a tug would take it elsewhere if needed.
Correct. And in the event of a hurricane or a storm or if some work needed to be done in the park or on the seawall, then it would be relocated with a tug.
We're speaking with, that was Dr. Ted Kaplow. He's co-founder and CEO of CAPSCI. Natalie Manzano-Smith is the Director of Innovation at CAPSCI. And Matt Hagman is Program Director for the Knight Foundation. And we're on Topical Currents. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're speaking about the Knight Cities Challenge. And with a Knight Cities Challenge grant winner, we're with Matt Hagman. He's Program Director for the Knight Foundation. Natalie Manzano-Smith is the Director of Innovation at CAPSCI. And Dr. Ted Kaplow is co-founder and CEO of CAPSCI. So, Matt, let's get back to the Knight Cities Challenge to let people know that who it's open to. You don't have to be in the 26 communities. You don't have to be a company. Tell us who's...
You can apply from anywhere. The idea, in our case, has to be in Miami or in one of the other 25 Knight Cities.
The idea has to be.
That it has to take place there. So here, you know, in Miami, it just has to... You can be sitting right now in Boston and say, I have a great idea for Miami, and I'm going to apply, and that that's acceptable.
Right.
But the point I really want to underline is that anyone can apply. By that, I mean you don't need to be a 501c3. You don't need to be part of an organization of some kind. An individual with a big idea, go for it. Right. And so that's sort of a signature piece of the Knight Cities Challenge, along with the Knight Arts Challenge as well, is that it's about the idea. And so don't worry about, you know, whether or not you're part of an organization or having some sort of legal affiliation such as a 501c3.
And how much do you have to know about the project for you to be considered? Does it have to be an absolute start to finish the conception?
It doesn't have to, you know, completely fully baked, but it has to be an idea that we can understand. We understand the impact, the innovation that you're driving in a community, and how you can deliver on it. And think about, you know, sort of three areas in particular that drive success in cities around talent, opportunity, engagement. Think about how your idea, as you consider, and it's October 1st, just to remind everyone when the competition starts, October 1st to October 26th, nightcities.org. Think about how your idea sort of can potentially drive in each one of those areas, right? Expanding opportunity, increasing community engagement in some way, attracting and retaining talent here in Miami.
To get an idea of the varieties of these submissions, take me through this business of the Akron Kitchen Incubator.
That was actually in...
incubating?
That was actually in Gary, Indiana.
Gary, I'm sorry.
And it was called Art House, a Social Kitchen by the Rebuild Foundation. And what they did is they repurposed a vacant space in downtown to create this culinary incubator. And so that had sort of multiple impacts, right? One hand, you're revitalizing a part of downtown in Gary. Furthermore, you're creating this really neat opportunity for people who are interested in trying to build ideas around food. You're creating a space where you can do that. You can connect with others, engage with others who are interested in that. So that's one example of an idea that was successful.
And is there a fee to apply?
No, absolutely not.
And how many times can you apply?
As many as you'd like.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So the barriers are really low. It's really about the idea. But it has to be an idea that, you know, we can understand. We understand the impact, the innovative qualities, and that ultimately, of course, that you can deliver on it. But if you can check those boxes, we really encourage you to apply. It's a great opportunity. That idea that you've been thinking about for a long time, you know, on your block, you thought, God, this would be so great for the community.
But
here's an opportunity to get that.
By the same token, someone in Miami can have a great idea for Boston, or
they can have a great idea for Boston, but the Knight Cities Challenge won't fund it. Because if it's actually going to take place in Boston, then that's not something we're interested in. These are ideas that will take place in
I meant the communities.
That's where the submission would happen.
Yeah.
Yes, vice versa. Absolutely.
Right.
Natalie Marzano, take us for a visual tour of this barge. What would we see when we approach it?
So you'd come onto the barge and you'd see hydroponics, aquaponics, aquaculture. You'd see a variety of solar energy, from passive trackers to solar panels. You'd be able to walk down onto a water level platform where you could do water quality testing and explore the bay using these really interesting underwater remote cameras that kind of move around like little submarines and shoot a picture back up to the barge. There'll be a classroom area where we'll have different types of lectures and engage in student tours during the day. And we hope it's going to be a really interesting space for people in Miami.
Seems like most of these things today have interactive aspects.
Correct.
Is that built in also?
Correct. So you'll be able to learn about all the different systems, understand how to take these systems home with you. So obviously not to the scale that we have it on the barge, but how you can take a hydroponic system and implement it in your own backyard.
Right.
Or how you'd be able to install solar panels, for example, in your home. And not only that, but talk about how these technologies can be implemented in Miami overall, how businesses can use them, and how we can talk about moving Miami forward in a sustainable way.
Dr. Kaplow, tell us about CAPSci. What is it? And it's a nonprofit, but what do you do?
CAPSci, first of all, we're called CAPSci because of the phrase Kaplow Applied Science. So it's a play on my name and then the idea of applied science. And what we mean by applied science is the ideas and technologies that advance society forward. And that's, we are a nonprofit. We're configured as a foundation, but that's not terribly significant. We function a bit like a kind of hybrid between a public nonprofit and a private foundation. But we have a number of programs. The Science Barge is one of them. We have programs with a new Frost Museum of Science in Miami, a program called CAPSCI Inventors, that is around finding technological solutions to certain very major problems, such as coral reef degradation or even cancer. We have a project on cancer. We have another project called the Children's Prize. It's a global child mortality prize. But in each of these areas, we're looking for ideas and technologies that can efficiently move the needle on, and because we're not very large and we're not terribly deeply resourced, so we're very interested in leverage, and we're very interested in the way that the modern digital connectivity in the world has allowed people and ideas to mix more freely around the globe, really in the same spirit as what Knight has done with Knight City's Challenge and with many of their other initiatives, where you're trying to level the playing field and make innovation and change very democratic and invite sort of anybody in to apply you as a good idea. We're just kind of on the engineering end of the spectrum. When it comes to the Science Barge, sort of the most important thing about this program to me is that we're building it and putting it out there, and then the community will come together around it and create unforeseen positive outcomes. I often think of the line from Field of Dreams, the movie where the old baseball player Ghost says to it's the Kevin Costner character, you know, if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. And, I had, with both the first Science project and also the second one, you have a lot of people who are trying to understand exactly what the purpose is, what's the meaning. We did a lot of hydroponic agriculture on the first one, and I had a lot of people saying, what do you mean? You think we should coat the Hudson River with barges and that's the solution to the food crisis? And I said, no, that's, you're being very literal about this. But I think if you bring all these different technologies about sustainability tangibly together in one place on one floating platform, and then you put a person in that environment, it completely changes the way they look at those ideas. It makes things much more tactile, tangible, mm-hmm. hands-on, what they call experiential education, place-based education, all of those concepts that take us, you know, rather than reading a magazine or being in a classroom or even listening to a program on the radio, this allows you to physically get up close and personal with all these different projects, and that really encourages people to get engaged with the future in a different way.
Now, this barge is expected to be finished next year. When, where?
Well,
so the barge will start construction on Wednesday of next week, and we're constructing on the Miami River and hope to have it done early January and have it in place sometime in the winter of 2016.
Can sidewalk superintendents come and take a look? Or?
Absolutely. Well, we encourage it. We encourage visitors, and we'll be providing more information on our website as we have more details.
And your website is?
MiamiScienceBarge.org.
Okay. And Matt, before we go again, let's talk about the dates that the applications
are
being accepted.
Night City's Challenge opens up October the 1st, runs through October the 26th. And to find out more, please go to nightcities.org, KnightCities.org.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Huh? Should be fun.
Yeah, should be fun. It. Maybe you'll apply.
Yeah, you guys should apply.
We've been speaking with Matt Hagman. He is director for the Knight Foundation. Prior to joining the Knight Foundation, Matt was an award-winning journalist at the Daily Business Review and the Miami Herald. Natalie Manzano-Smith is the director of innovation at CAPSCI. She has years of experience managing strategy and outreach campaigns focused on public health and environmental sustainability. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Dr. Ted Kaplow is co-founder and CEO of CAPSCI. He's an engineer and entrepreneur with interests in sustainable food production, renewable energy, biodiversity, and child mortality. And we thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
This was great. It's a pleasure.
Food and Dining, up next.
And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. 34 minutes past 1 o'clock. Chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer is here with us. She joins us in just a few short minutes. But first, Bonnie and I want to say a few brief words on behalf of a longtime colleague and a really great friend, someone who's been important here at WLRN for decades, and that would be Ed Bell. I first heard Ed's easy, informed radio voice back in the mid-1970s when he was a young music host on an all-jazz station here in South Florida. That would be WBUS. There were some true legends on that station, including China Vallis, Joe Rico, Symphony Sid, and others. And for those old enough to remember, the bus ride ended abruptly, so we wanted Ed to come to WLRN. Ed went on the air and also helped produce many, many community concerts, which helped provide the seed money to get the Friends of WLRN organization on the map. And during Ed's time here, he's seen this station develop from a little-known, low-wattage station to the community public radio voice. And he's been a big part of it. Bonnie, of course, for the many past years, Ed has produced and hosted the Arts Beat program each Friday on the station. And he's brought so many artists on the air for his live monthly broadcast concerts. That would be well over 100 over his Arts Beat career. And that's not an easy job, 100 concerts. Well, Bonnie, Ed is now retiring after so many fruitful years, and I'm really going to miss him.
Well, I think we're all going to miss Ed. He always has a smile on his face. He's always cheerful.
Very upbeat.
Always has something good. I mean, his bye-bye, enjoy, is legendary. And I'm thinking, you know, on his concerts, he had everything from classical concerts to jazz concerts to Afro-Cuban concerts, Afro-Cuban
music, I think,
folk music, rock and roll, I think, even, like the 18-wheelers, you know, blues. He did so much on those. We're going to miss the South Florida Arts Beat live concerts, and so will, of course, many of you miss them. So did you want to take that?
Well, no, this is something for our food and dining segment. So anyway, Ed, let us say how much you'll be missed. We've had adjoining offices here for years and continued a valuable friendship, which we can never forget. You meant so much to us. Both Bonnie and I and the many folks who've enjoyed working alongside you here for so many years appreciate your contribution to our efforts, your great loyalty, your great music knowledge and taste, and your skill and commitment to broadcasting in the true sense of public radio. And that's what it's all about. And Ed, it really won't be the same here without you. And now I'm getting a little bit choked up.
And I'd like to say, the years I've been here, that Ed, we wish you so much luck. We'll just miss your sunny smile and walking down the hallways. Anyway, good luck to you, Ed.
Willing to lend a helping hand. We appreciate that. So we wish you the best of luck. We really do, Ed.
And bye-bye, enjoy.
And bye-bye, enjoy.
Well, now our Thursday extravaganza with Linda Gassenheimer. Today we delve into the wonderful and historic world of French cuisine. Linda, listeners may not know that you're a Cordon Bleu chef.
And a great friend of Jacques Pepin.
Yes, we've had him on several
Claudine
times.
Claudine Pepin.
Oh, yes, Claudine. We can't
forget Jacques's
her.
About to have his 80th birthday, and that's just when I was with my good friend Anne Willen. Last spring, we were in Washington at a experience of 80th birthday for Jacques Pepin, and Anne and I contributed a cake for his birthday. Anyway, but Anne has started something really important. She started La Varenne Cooking School. So, Joe, I know you keep asking me how to make a pastry crust. This is your opportunity.
I had to call you once. I was making a pie.
No, but Anne's going to set you straight. She really is. She's going to tell us how to make a flaky one, not a lumpy, rock-solid one. Or maybe you had a cake and you tried to turn it out and half of it stayed in the pan. She's going to help us with some basic recipes. Give us her secrets. Because her cookbook is now called Secrets from the La Varenne Kitchen. And I'd like to welcome Anne Willen. She's joining us. Hello, Anne.
It's very nice to hear your voice, Linda.
Well, and likewise, too. And also, we'd love to hear the voices of our listeners. Please call us if you have a question for Ann Whelan. Maybe you had a recipe that failed, and she can help you. Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. I don't know, are we... Yes,
I think we do today.
Okay, good.
Radio at WLRN.org is our email. Good. And also, we are periscoping, I believe. Are we, Paul? Yes.
Yes, all right.
On our Twitter account, you go to @topicalcurrents, and you can actually watch the show.
There you go.
As well.
All right. Okay. We have to behave ourselves, I guess. We're going to be watched. And also with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner Minutes columns, and you can also read Fred's wine column in the Saturday Miami Herald. So, Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, first, please give my best to Ed Bell. He's a good guy. Indeed. And also, what I'm going to be talking about, you're talking about food basics, so I guess I'll talk about wine basics, which means basic wine-food pairings.
All right. Sounds good. Well, and let's first get to this pie crust situation that Joe has been bothering me with for years and years.
He didn't know it was a bother.
No, it's a pleasure, Joe.
The banana cream filling was wonderful.
What's your secret here?
That's the main thing. Joe, how do you make your pie dough?
Well, it was flour, and I had the cold water and tried to get it into the little pea-size balls. And
you had to put
I
butter
used
in
the,
it.
The U-shaped contraption, you know, the pastry, what do you call that?
Oh, so you're making it in the electric mixer?
No.
No?
I was doing it in a bowl by hand. Maybe that's my problem.
And you've got one of those cutter things to cut up the fat?
Yes.
Good.
And I used butter, not lard. Maybe I should have used lard.
Use half lard, half butter.
Oh.
Or all butter, one or the other. Lard makes it nice and crumbly.
Lard isn't as bad as people think it is it?
No.
It's about the same as butter.
Exactly.
Yes, well, but one gives
just
color.
A little bit.
One gives color and one gives... texture. So, but I noticed in your recipe in La Varenne Kitchen, the book, Secrets from the La Varenne Kitchen, that you put an egg in your pastry. Is that right?
Well, it's an egg yolk.
Uh-huh. Well, why did you? I've never heard of
Sometimes
that.
Sometimes it's not mandatory, but it holds the dough together and gives it more richness. It's richer than water, put it that way.
But then you did a little bit of what. Now, I know we talked earlier, well, we've talked many times, but you said, do not use that machine to make it. Is that right?
She was trying to lead me down that road.
Yes.
Things are always better by hand. You can feel it, and then you can tell when it's doing the right thing. The main thing, Joe, is to use just the ends of your fingers to rub in the fat. Don't rub it too much, and don't add too much water.
You don't want to create any heat. That's why you just use your fingertips, correct?
That's it. So it gets nice and...
Then how did I turn out with such a mess if I have all the answers?
Well, you didn't. You were supposed to use half lard and half butter.
Oh.
Well, we don't know what proportion.
And the egg yolk.
But now you've got the recipe here, so you're going to be able to make one, and you're going
to
tell us.
I'll bring one in next week.
But the tricky part is adding the water, not too much water. Hmm. Because if you add too much water, it gets too sticky, and then you have to add more flour and when you're rolling it out, and then it all gets rather hard.
Does gluten?
See, maybe I can use this advice in making my lobster pot pie this Christmas.
Yeah.
The elusive pot pie.
Yes, Fred's been trying to make a pot pie for many, many years, Anne. But let's go on to this thing with the cake, because you have a wonderful tip here. I mean, it happens to so many people. They make this beautiful cake, they go to turn it out, and half of it stays behind.
Oh, goodness. I frankly don't remember what the tip was, but I know what I would do.
Yeah, well, tell me.
I would tip back the cake on top of what was left in the pan. Then I'd run a knife around the edge. Then I'd turn it out again onto the wire rack, and I would put a very damp cloth on top of the warm pan. And that helps to loosen the cake itself.
Well, that's very interesting. So that's great to know how to repair a problem. But one of your tips is that you can put a piece of paper, let's say parchment paper even, in the bottom of the pan and grease that. And so when you turn it out, it all comes out together, and it's really, really works.
One should always line the pan with paper.
Okay.
It makes it brown more evenly on the bottom, too.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yes.
Very good. Well, you know, we've mentioned La Varenne Cooking School. I'm not sure how many people know about it. You started it in 1975 in Paris, and you're English, and you opened the school in Paris. So tell us why. Tell us about that.
I had been to the Cordon Bleu in Paris when it was a very small school, 10 years before that. And we weren't very many students. There were no written recipes. There was no translation of the excellent but crusty old chef who didn't speak a word of English. I could speak French, but a lot of the other students couldn't. And at the time, I said to myself, I want to found a school in Paris where people will get written recipes and full translation so they can really take it home.
Well, now we can take this home with your secrets, your book that tells us all about, because we haven't even got to the area with all you have these wonderful tips about sauces and all. But we're going to go to a break now, and we'll be right back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking with culinary icon Ann Willen, and we'll take a short break and be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Ann Willen. She's the author of many, many award-winning cookbooks, and she's the founder of the famous La Varenne Cooking School in Paris. Her latest book is Secrets from the La Varenne Kitchen, and it's a wonderful guide to making great food, and she's been giving us some of her secrets. But right now, I have a secret dinner in minutes. It's not going to be secret anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was the first day of autumn. And although it's kind of hard to think about autumn here in the 90-degree heat, I thought we'd have an autumn dinner. And it's an autumn burger slider with red pepper and sweet potatoes. So I heat mushrooms and onions in a microwave, so that makes it easy for you. And then in a separate bowl, I'll mix up some mustard and some maple syrup to make it into a sauce.
What kind of mustard?
I use the Dijon mustard. Okay, and thank you for asking about that. And then I put half that mixture of the sauce and the mushrooms into some sirloin, ground sirloin, and I make them into very small patties to fit into the slider rolls. And I cook them about, saute them about 3 minutes per side. I like to go for 145 degrees for medium rare, and you can work up or down from that point. And then you put them on the slider rolls, and you put the remaining mushrooms and sauce on top, and it makes a really nice, easy, and fun dish. And the side dish, I make that in the microwave too. I cut some red bell peppers, and I peel some sweet potatoes. I'll make them all about the same size, about 1 inch, and microwave it all for about 5 minutes. Toss with a little olive oil and salt and pepper. And what I love about that is that there's no pot to wash. So the complete recipe and a photo. It's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, as I said, since you're talking about food basics, I'll talk about basic wine food pairings. Now, I suppose the most basic pairings everybody knows, red meat goes with red wine and white meat goes with white wine. And that's a cliche, mostly because it's true. But then you have the more audacious gourmets who insist that some fish go better with red wine, and that's true too. But not any fish and not any wine. A light-bodied red like Pinot Noir goes nicely with fish if the fish is full-flavored with fatty flesh like salmon or swordfish, tuna, that sort of thing. You would not want to have a heavy-duty Barolo wine with a piece of cod. That would not work at all. Now, the next rule of thumb is that spicy food goes well with a wine with some sweetness to it. So spicy Chinese Sichuan dishes with an off-dry Riesling or a Chenin Blanc or something like that. But there's another rule that a lot of people don't think about that I think works very well, and that is to go by the weight and the power of the wine. So a big New York strip steak goes with a full-bodied tannic wine like Cabernet Sauvignon.
Oh, I thought we were going to have to weigh the wine, Fred.
Well, you weigh it in your mouth. You get the you use your palate for this, not your
okay.
scale.
They're all looking at me askance. I'm sorry, Fred.
Okay, but as an example, though, I was at a restaurant one time, and their nightly special was steak and Beaujolais. And the big, powerful steak and the light-bodied wine made the worst combination of the week. It really did not work. Another thing, spiral-cut ham goes with the rosé wine, which sounds kind of silly because pink meat and pink wine, but that actually works as well. And then you come to the specialty pairings. Now, this can be hard. I was once invited in Miami to a meeting of the National Explorer Club, and the topic was what to do if stranded in a desert isle or in the jungle. And they passed around samples of deep-fried crickets, boiled scorpions, antelope pastrami, that sort of thing. And it was my job to make the wine pairings. Now, this was easy at first.
I want to know if you had that bottle of wine with you on when you're stranded.
Well, you had the other problem was you had to have a nice case of assorted wine with you, but you know that could happen.
Okay, sure.
So it was easy at first: red wine with the antelope, white wine with the snake cakes, that sort of thing. But what color meat is a cricket? Green. And you know it's hard to find a green wine. And of course, when it comes to the crocodile, the important thing is not the color of the wine. It's to eat your dinner before your dinner eats you.
Okay, so we're all set now when we're stranded. Thank you,
now
Fred.
Now you know what to eat served with a scorpion.
Thank you, Fred Tasker. Let's go back to cake, okay? And Willen, last time we were together, we were doing a lot about cakes for Jacques Pepin's 80th. Now, when you say you're making your cake, that you should whip the egg whites, yolks, and sugar to form a ribbon. And I was with somebody the other day and I said, make sure you form a ribbon. And they had no idea what I was talking about. So what do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is you lift the whisk and there'll be a fairly thick trail running down back into the mixture. And when you pull the whisk aside, it leaves a trail on top of the stiff mixture.
So, and why is that important? Because, you know, sometimes people, you know, you'll make a cake and it'll be wonderful. And the next time you make it and it's not so great. And I have a feeling it's because you don't follow all of those exact rules.
Well, yes. Well, at the beginning when you mix the eggs and sugar, it's all floppy. I mean, it's almost liquid. And then it gradually thickens and goes white as you whisk it. And then when it gets to the stage that it has this aforesaid ribbon, that's the perfect moment. If you keep whisking, you kind of knock some of the air out of it.
Okay, and then, well, that's good to know. So, and also, you know, here in Florida, when we're baking, it's difficult because even with air conditioning, there's a lot of humidity in the kitchen.
Yes.
Well, let's go on because we're talking about Florida and we're talking about the fact that you have a section on making ice cream. So you notice I'm leaning towards all the desserts in your book. And if people do make their own ice cream, you make it with a custard, but lots of times you put nuts or chocolate chips or something and it all falls to the bottom. So how do you prevent that?
Well, you should add them when the ice cream is nearly set.
Oh, so don't put it in before that.
So don't put it in before that. Put it in kind of at the last minute.
Okay, well, that's a good tip. And the other part of your book is about poaching fruit, and we're coming into apple and pear season, and it's really nice to be able to get some and poach it. It makes a really nice dessert. Mm-hmm. So what are your tips here for poaching fruit?
You need fruit that's not too ripe.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ripe, sure, so that it's nice and sweet, but not soft and falling apart.
Okay.
Cut it all in even pieces. taking out the core or the pit or whatever you need to do, but so that they all cook evenly, and they should all be the same ripeness. And poach is very specific. It means, so it's a low simmer, so there's just a sort of little bump at the side of the sugar syrup. If you boil fruit, it'll fall apart.
And also, the sugar syrup, sometimes you have a problem with it if you do that, if you boil it too much. Is that right?
Yes, well, you can do, particularly if there's a little bit of undissolved sugar left. It'll all start crystallizing, yeah.
Right. Well, all of these wonderful tips are in Anne Willen's book called Secrets from the Lavarin Kitchen. And I think it's important for people, you know, I was once told by a cooking teacher that, why does everybody want to make a souffle before they know how to scramble eggs? It's important, I think, to know how to...
Begin at the beginning.
Yes. Yeah. If you have some ideas of the basics, then you can go ahead and create whatever you want from that. There was just one quick other question here, because I was at a party recently and the hostess came running out of the kitchen and said, Linda, please help me. I said, what's the matter? I'm whipping this cream and it will not whip. And I went into the kitchen and I found out it was very warm. The cream was warm. The kitchen was warm. What's your tip here, Anne Willen?
Oh, chill the whisk, chill the bowl, chill the cream.
Right. And so that's what I did.
Before you whisk it.
And be patient.
Well, that yes. won't help if it's too warm, right?
Well, I threw everything in the freezer. I said,
"Go." That was a very good idea.
Go serve some more wine to everyone before.
Yes.
So, well, these are all wonderful, and I know now that you have the Lavarin Cooking School is now in California.
We give classes here in my kitchen from time to time, and I'm still writing articles and cookbooks. Hence my latest book.
Well, that's wonderful, and it's always a delight talking with you. Thank you, Anne Willen, for joining us and for this great information. Thank you.
That's lovely to talk to you, Linda.
Okay, her book.
Thanks for those tips, ma'am.
Her book, yeah, and Joe, you promised to make a pie for next week.
We'll let you know how it goes.
And we'll let you know if he does that. So
you do that.
Her book
is... I think the battery's in my hearing yes. aid.
Her book is Secrets from the Lavarin Kitchen, 50 Essential Recipes Every Cook Needs to Know. Fred Tasker, thanks for your great advice, as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joseph Kupumbani Berman. Great talking with you today.
Lovely. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next week, we'll be talking with one of Florida's favorite chefs, Cindy Hudson, from Orchanique on the Mile. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
I remember her from the Lincoln Road days.
Yes.
And that wraps up today's program. Our producer, Richard Ives. Technical direction provided by online producer, Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. More information, including links and photos, at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow, at this time, it's the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, Bonnie and I return with a program about the bizarre financial picture of big-time college football. How about a $10,000 donation for a prized stadium seat? Tax-deductible, of course. Fortune 500 companies would kill for football profit margins. And shouldn't most college weight rooms have a scenic waterfall? They have one at Oregon, courtesy of Nike. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, stay tuned for Here and Now from NPR News and Ed Bell's Trademark. Bye-bye. Enjoy.